making paper.
Welcome to episode 46 of Paper Talk, a monthly series of podcast interviews featuring artists and professionals who are working in the field of hand papermaking and paper art. I'm Helen Hebert, and today I'm talking with Stephanie Hare, who runs Share Studios in Philadelphia. Stephanie has one of the most beautiful Instagrams about paper that I've ever seen, featuring images of fiber in water, equipment, and sheets of handmade paper in luscious colors. Check it out at Instagram.com/share.studios. We had a lovely conversation about how Stephanie's business has evolved since she learned to make paper after college in Maine while working in a gallery specializing in handmade paper and paper lights. She tells me how she has built a strong following online, first for her lights and then her stationery products.
The envelopes were a mixture of Kozo and Abaca. Because I love the Kozo and those long kind of flowy fibers and that more organic kind of feel to it. I also find that they made stronger envelopes too. So we did that. And then the inside sheets were Abaca.
We talk about the decisions she has to make while running a business with popular products all by herself. Not only does she make paper, but she creates molds and decals and sells a basic papermaking kit too. Enjoy our conversation. Well, Stephanie Hare, welcome to Paper Talk. I'm so excited to talk to you and get to know you and share your story with my listeners.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm super excited.
Yeah. Well, tell me how you caught the paper bug.
Oh, gosh. Well, it's quite a while ago. I had just recently graduated from college with a degree in studio art and art education. Mm-hmm. And I really had no idea what I wanted to do. I knew I was a maker and an artist, but I figured I'd take the summer to kind of figure it out. And then a friend called me out of the blue that spring and said there was a lady looking for some help at a little handmade paper gallery. And it wasn't far from me, maybe about 45 minutes. So I drove out to go meet her. And it was just kind of history from there.
Wow. So where was that? Where were you living? And
so I was in Ellsworth, Maine.
Okay.
And the gallery was in Brooklyn, Maine. Mm-hmm. Brooklyn, L-I-N.
Right.
So it is just this really amazing, really quiet coastal town. It's a boat building town. And I had never been out that way. It's out on the peninsula in Maine. It's just a gorgeous location. Mm-hmm. So it was a beautiful drive. And then Gigi is the owner of the, Virginia is her name, but everyone calls her Gigi.
Uh-huh.
She's the owner of the gallery. She gave me a little tour around town, which was kind of funny because it's just kind of a little walk down to the general store and, you know, nobody around, but it just felt perfect. So I started there. It was just supposed to be like a couple days in the summertime to mm-hmm. help her out when she couldn't be there because it's also her home. And it's really just a summer job, but it kind of like quickly turned into a bigger, more, it was always part-time, but it turned into something bigger, and I stayed there for 6 years, for quite a while. Yeah, the gallery focused on artist-grade handmade papers, but mostly custom lampshades. That was our big thing. So I learned how to do the lampshades early on, and we just kept going. I probably made about hundreds of those things.
So you were actually, so Virginia Sarsfield, I think she is a member of the Friends of Dart Hunter, and I've met her before. She's
yeah.
in a national group. Yeah. And so she was making paper to put onto these lampshades, and people would bring them in, like
yeah.
old shades?
Uh-huh. Yeah. That was a lot of her work, was people bringing in old shades that we could kind of strip down and refurbish. And a lot of it was also, we started designing our own shade frames and having those.
Okay.
And she was really good at like hunting around and finding good vintage frames. So she has a really large collection of frames. So people come in. So a lot of times they bring their lamp, and then we could kind of try on a bunch of different frames and figure out the right style and then figure out the right paper. She had a big selection. So I worked a lot of one-on-one with the customers and doing that. And uh-huh. then making the actual shades themselves. And it was a really great opportunity to kind of like get into a smaller business and really learn from the bottom up.
Right.
Not everything.
Yeah, so, how to run a business too. Yeah.
Yeah. I had zero experience with anything. So it was great. And I eventually got into Etsy and then moving her online a little bit too. It was a really great place for me to kind of get my foot in the door and connect with a lot of other artisans in the area.
Yeah. And I want to hear about everything, but tell me just a little basic about what you were making paper out of.
Sure. At Gigi's, primarily it was Kozo, mostly because we like the translucent effect of it. Mm-hmm. For me, so it was all how it looked in the light. It was the most important part. So it was a lot of Kozo, a little bit of Abaca, more translucent things. And she really likes to just experiment and make a wide variety of papers. So there was always some unique kind of paper to work with and try and kind of make some beautiful lampshades. So it was really fun. I enjoyed it a lot.
And did she have a fully equipped studio, or were you hand beading the Kozo?
She had a beader, or she still does, yes. Yep. there was some hand beading too. She's got a little studio out back. She's got her front gallery and home, which people can just walk in the summertime. And then out back is the studio, which is really great location. She's a lucky lady.
Okay, so you worked there for 6 years, and then what happened next?
I did. Well, while I was there, I worked a lot of other part-time jobs too. Mm-hmm. I've worked at a banquet server at a country club for quite a while. And during that time that I was kind of doing both, I decided that, you know, I always knew I was a maker and that I wanted to make something, but I never knew exactly what it was. And the lampshades kind of got me into it. I was really into sculpture in college. Quite a few of my sculptures were actually had some kind of light aspect to them, or I was really into function as well. So getting into the gallery and making the lampshades was kind of like a perfect transition there. After making all of her lampshades, I realized like I really wanted to design my own lamps, and I was really more contemporary styles and things like that. So, you know, when you're starting out, you want to keep things as simple as possible. And I could kind of, I was inspired by glass as well. So being a banquet server, I found a really cool wine bottle that I thought was fabulous. And we designed really simple column shades that fit on the wine bottles. So I opened my first Etsy shop and just started selling those really simple glass and paper shades, which eventually evolved into more kind of better put together concepts of the glass and the lamp, which is now my vessel lamp design. So it's kind of flipped the glass over. So it's an empty piece of glassware on the bottom with a shade that fits on top. So it's been a long evolution, but that's kind of like the short story of my own work with the lamps.
Yeah, and I share an interest in paper and light, and I made lamps for a while too, and I know how hard it is to find interesting bases. So the construction part. So I'm curious how you're wiring through the glass and addressing issues of the translucency and seeing the wiring and anything you want to share.
Yeah, that was a really fun, like, problem solving kind of thing. You know, in the beginning, you don't know what you're doing. We had to figure out how to weld and do everything. And, you know, we were working with wine bottles, so you got to drill a hole in it and get the cord to go through. So that was a bit of a challenge. And cleaning the bottle was a big challenge too, because, you know, you can't have anything inside there. It's going to be illuminated.
Right.
So I did a few of those and was continually frustrated with it, and eventually came upon the glass vessel. It was just a simple vase I think I found somewhere. Just thinking, how can I use this? You know, I've got to figure out a way to do this. And so one day I was looking through the grand brass lamp parts, you know, there's all the different lamp parts that you could use. I was familiar with the work, with my work at Gigi's. And it suddenly come to me that like I could design a shade that fit over the top, that kind of just sat on top. So it came, you know, originally it was just kind of like welded feet and it was really rudimentary and whatever. And we sold those. They were popular on Etsy for a while, but they eventually kind of evolved into a more refined thing. So the shade in the lamp is actually one big piece, and then the glass base is separate. So it just comes right off the bottom, and you can put whatever you want inside. For a while, they were really popular as terrariums, the terrarium phase. So they were popular on Etsy for that. But I love them empty as well. But for me, it's all about the lampshade. And I do all my own welding and building. I build the whole entire thing myself, everything but the glass.
Okay.
So yeah, that's a little bit of the evolution of that too.
Right, right. And you're still making those?
I do. I do. Here and there. Okay. When I moved to Philadelphia, my welding area was nixed. So there's not much space for welding. And, you know, you can only focus on so many things at once. So the lamps have gone a little bit to the side, but I'm going to bring them back in the fall, I think, and do one last big hurrah. Yeah.
Okay. So, so you moved to Philadelphia. How long ago was that?
Oh, gosh, a couple of years now.
You okay.
Know, it's been a while, which longer than it feels.
You're still so young. And so, yeah, so what else, what other products did you develop as you phased out the lamps or took a hiatus?
Yeah. I had to kind of like take a break from the lamps for a little while with a life transition. And I just kind of focused on the handmade paper aspect of it. And I started making smaller sheets, like letter size, and I had made some molds that were larger. You know, I was really into lampshade parts, so large sheets were the thing. But I started making envelopes and just little things here and there, trying to fill my time and figure out where I was going without the lamps if I wasn't doing those. And I just sold it on Etsy, and you know, the wedding industry kind of picked it up a little bit, and it kind of went from there. So I have shifted my focus more towards paper and stationery at this point.
Right. So tell me about your setup, what kind of equipment you have. And like, I'm curious, the large mold, how large that is. And, did you make that? Cause I know you make molds and decals, or did you?
I do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, molds and decals are the real coveted piece that you have to have when you're a paper maker. And
right.
If you can't make it yourself or have friends that can help you, it's a challenge. But I was very lucky to work with a furniture maker that I met through the gallery, actually. I was able to, I took one of Gigi's larger molds, beautiful mold, and we kind of recreated it in his studio. So he helped me. It's really kind of involved joints and joinery and strap, supports and things. Mm-hmm. So he helped me make I think we made about 5 or 6 that day. And so my largest one, I think, is like close to 16 by 20, I think.
Okay.
And then my most often used is 12 by 18 now, since I'm not doing huge lampshades. And then I had like a 16 by 16, but they were all larger.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I eventually, when I got to Philly, I decided that I needed to make some smaller molds. Mm-hmm. So thankfully my boyfriend is also a furniture maker. So he helped me design and build the first few and kind of set me up with how to do it. And I've kind of streamlined it from there, and I can do the entire process myself now. I make my own. Yeah.
Right. And so since we're on that topic, let's talk about those a little bit, because I know you're selling molds and decals too, and you have, you've developed a magnetic connection.
I have. Yeah. So when I first started the molds, it was actually from a lot of interest on Instagram. I would get a lot of questions about papermaking, like how to make paper. This is amazing. How do I do it? Mm-hmm. So I had decided in my mind that like, I've got to put together some kind of learning situation for this. Let's put together a kit and a short tutorial and set people up with this, because I know there's a lot of interest. So we designed the first mold. It was 11 by 14. And it was actually a mold that fit over, I mean, it was a decal fit over the mold, you know, so it sits inside it.
Right.
It's a beautiful mold, but a little more complicated in terms of building. And if you're running a business by yourself, you got to figure out all the ways to kind of simplify things and so that you can handle it all.
Right, right.
So one day, and at this time, I needed to build my own molds. Wedding production was picking up, and you can't make things one sheet at a time. It's going to take you forever. Mm-hmm. So I started building a few of the smaller ones. They were just small one sheet ones, but they were flush mold, because then you can make, you know, each frame is the same. There's no difference in the design.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, then they don't stick together.
Right.
And it was mostly for storage for me. Cause you know, you got molds and decals kicking all around and you want them to be together. So I was just kind of brainstorming one day and thought, what about a magnet? Something that would hold them together, not too tight, but something that would keep them together. So I played around with a few prototypes and my own molds, kind of fixing those up, and it worked amazingly. So I made a few smaller ones to start out and sold those online. And then I realized that, you know, I got to have some multiple sheet molds. So we're finally, this year, started making larger ones. So, you know, 8 sheets or 4 sheets or however many sheets will fit on a decent sized mold. So I'm still developing those. I make them to order, certain sizes here and there. But I'm mostly just, you know, making them for myself. And then while I'm making one for myself, I might as well make them for others. So going into production with that, some new sizes coming out all the time and just trying to build inventory as well. But yeah, they've been really popular. I mean, I sell them made to order right now, so I haven't been able to keep anything in stock. But they're really great. I'm very proud of that. You know, there's not that many mold and deckle makers out there. And that is one of the bigger challenges for people who are interested in the craft.
Right. And I'm super excited to get my hands on one. We had a little shipping fiasco, so I don't have one yet. But by the time this podcast comes out, I will. So you were mentioning that you needed a lot in your studio. So are you making, when you make sheets, are you making, are you letting several drain at a time? So what's your sort of sheet making process?
Yeah, it depends on the size I'm making. Yeah. Ideally, I'd like to work with two molds at a time so mm-hmm. that I can pull and then I let it drain off to the side. In my new studio, it's a great, large, amazing studio, but it's not great for water. You know, it's got like plywood floors and things like that. So I had to kind of think about how I'm going to collect the water in my system. So I have tubs off to the side. I always work with those big cement mixing tubs. Yeah. So I drain one off into the side and then, you know, drain the other. And then I actually cooch right into a tub as well. So that collects the water.
That's a really interesting topic you bring up, because I have a similar issue in my studio. I can get water on the floor, but I don't have a drain.
Yeah.
Just plywood. I've coated it with porch paint and then I vacuum it up. But do you try to just have zero water on the floor?
I try. I put a tarp down.
Okay.
You know, you're going to splash regardless.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I am very careful, but I have a mop that, like, if I do splash something, I can mop it up immediately. But uh-huh. I also designed, I have these large tables that I put PVC molding on the side. So it makes it more of like a large tray. So that can catch some of the splashing as well. So I call them water tables. So they mostly just collect the water, and then I can kind of sponge it up and collect it that way. So,
okay. I've heard of people putting gutters on the sides of tables.
Oh, yeah.
That's another idea. And then it would funnel into...
That's a good idea.
Bucket, because sponging it up or, yeah.
You know, it can be kind of cumbersome. It's right. A constant work in progress, really, just trying to figure it all out and streamline things. As you know, it's figuring out how to make it better.
Right. And so what kind of pulp are you using now in your studio for these invitations and stationary pieces? And how are you beating that pulp?
Primarily right now I've shifted my focus towards Apica. Easier to work with. When I first started, it was Kozo. I loved Kozo.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily that you could beat it by hand. You know, I was sitting there with a mallet and beating my pulp.
Right.
But eventually, you know, I got enough orders that, you know, that's not a feasible idea to be beating all of your pulp with a mallet. So I saved my money up for a Mark Lander beater. So
okay.
I have one of his small little guys, but it does the job, and I would be nowhere without it. But I do a lot of Abaca right now. I'm trying very with the wedding industry. I try to figure out what do they want, you know, but also keeping in line with my own artistic ideas and things that I want to do. So I really do this for myself. It's kind of a selfish thing, but I have to enjoy what I'm doing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I'm trying to create a more cohesive wedding collection. So collection of colors that I know I can easily replicate and keep in a, you know, keep things all the same. As you know, that handmade paper, if you change any part of the process, you're going to come out with a slightly different product. And I'm trying to keep things cohesive and available for people when they want them, so they don't have to wait forever while I make it too. Because I do quite a bit of custom work as well. So it depends on how long people want to wait for the paper as well.
Right. And so let's talk about the wedding industry, because I think I rediscovered you because I saw an article in Brides Magazine.
Yeah, that was great.
About this wedding that you made, I don't know, 9 different pieces for, or maybe more.
Yeah, there was a lot.
But I want to start sort of at the beginning. You were already making wedding invitations and...
Yeah, I was mostly just kind of making stationery and selling it online. And then mm-hmm. I would get people from on Instagram just popping in saying, can you make me however many of these or how many of this? And And Allie and Paula were the clients for this. Customer Allie was the bride and Paula was her mother. I worked mainly with the mother. But Allie contacted me and had seen some of my more decorative styles with kind of splashes of color in them.
On Instagram.
Yeah. Instagram is my main form of marketing.
Yeah.
And she said, I love this. Can you put together some kind of custom suite for my wedding? And this was the first big full custom suite that I've been able to do. So that was really exciting to be asked. So we went through the whole process. I sent them some samples of what I had on hand. And then I made even a couple batches of like sample papers for them, trying to streamline the colors a little bit because they did want a more decorative style. There's little splashes of color in there and keeping things cohesive for a large batch. I think it was around 120 per piece. And they were at least four or five elements to the invitation and then the wedding day papers as well. Mm-hmm. So I sent them samples back and forth. They told me what they liked and we kind of narrowed it down to exactly what we wanted. And then I just set about making it. So it was, the envelopes were a mixture of Kozo and Abaca because I love the Kozo and those long kind of flowy fibers and that more organic kind of feel to it. I also find that they made stronger envelopes too. So we did that. And then the inside sheets were Abaca. So I made the full sheet, shipped them out to the calligraphers, Marissa from Marissa Made, and she did a beautiful job with the calligraphy. And then it obviously went out as beautiful invitations. I wish I could have got one because they were so pretty. I did save a few sheets here and there for myself.
Hey, listeners, let's take a little break here. And I want to tell you about The Paper Year, a new monthly planner that is now for sale. Hooray! You can find it at bit.ly/12monthsofpaper. That's bit.ly/TWELVE months of paper. I'm rebranding the 12 months of paper calendar, a how-to book and calendar featuring a paper project every month, which I've produced for the past 3 years. The Paper Year is a wire-bound book still featuring 12 paper projects by me and 5 guest artists, and this year there's an added feature, a planner page a month, which allows you to jot down notes and plans, sketch out your ideas and dreams, and paste in swatches of the paper you use to create your projects. Get one for yourself and shop early for the holidays. Again, you can find that at bit.ly/12monthsofpaper. Spell out the word 12. Now back to the show.
You can go ahead.
Sorry, we're interrupting each other. So exciting. did you find the calligrapher or did she find it? And where were you sending these back and forth to?
I was sending them mostly to Paula, the mother, and then she would speak with Allie about it. She was the main wedding planner.
And they live where?
Oh, gosh, New Jersey.
They're
in
New Jersey,
where she is. Yep. And the wedding, I think it was in Tennessee there, I think.
Yeah.
It was beautiful spot. I wish I could go. It's amazing that I got to be in that feature and kind of see the full wedding because you hardly ever get to see the whole thing. Come together. Right. But yeah, so I she had found a calligrapher that she'd always worked with. It was just kind of her go-to stationer person. Mm-hmm. And they, for whatever reason, figured out that they couldn't do the calligraphy. Handmade paper, you know, is a challenge for most calligraphers. If you don't know how to work with it, it's very challenging. So Marissa was actually someone I found on Instagram who had purchased my papers in the past and shown me beautiful work that she'd done. So I knew she could tackle it. I knew it could be done.
So
I found Marissa and she was the perfect perfect fit for Paula and I.
Interesting. And do you add any sizing into your pulp?
I do. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did she comment? You know, because I'm a paper nerd, I want to know all the details. Did Marissa say anything about how she was able to work on it?
I think everything went well. I even at the time when I heard that it couldn't be written on, I kind of freaked out a little. You know, I know it could be done. So I contacted my calligraphy friends on Instagram. It's a huge community, and they said, "Well, use this specific ink." I can't remember what it was called, but it's like a no-bleed white ink. Uh-huh. And I tried it out. It was beautiful. So I think that's what they went with. As long as you know the right inks and nibs and kind of ways of working with it, it's a beautiful product.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So Yeah, so you're doing, that's amazing. You're doing most of your marketing on Instagram.
I am, yeah.
It's, and you have a beautiful Instagram. Everybody has to take a look at it. Your website, too.
Thank you.
You're really good at writing copy. Do you do that yourself?
Yeah, I do. Thank you for saying that. It's, I always feel a little nervous about my copy, but you know, you got to do everything. If you're working a small business, I literally do everything in my business. So you got to figure out how to do it.
Yeah. So I'm curious how you develop that style. If you have any memories of, do you just always read things and look at other people and kind of get ideas? Because I feel like I'm right there with you when I'm reading posts and you had this great thing where you said, the pages wait for your words. I love that. Yeah. So you're making the stationery that is waiting for words to be written on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the truth be told, I'm honestly, I'm a better writer than I am speaker. I'm quite shy, but, for whatever reason, writing comes more easily to me. And I think, combining that with Instagram, you know, when I first started Instagram, photos were terrible. And just thinking up a caption was the hardest thing. And, you know, you keep at it and you realize that it's more about storytelling as well.
Right.
Pulling people in. And, you know, I just kind of honed it on there. And then it just becomes an easier thing to kind of translate it into copy. But yeah, I'm a much better writer. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. And so do you still have an Etsy shop or do you sell mostly on your website?
No, I closed my Etsy a few years ago, hoping to move on. As with Instagram, that was my main source. I can drive my own traffic to my website.
Right.
Etsy, you find your traffic on there.
Right.
So I did open my own website there. But yeah, so far it's so good on Instagram. I mean, it's a changing marketplace these days with the Instagram isn't as great as it used to be, but so I will be kind of expanding my marketing in different ways. It's always a learning process, but it's a good thing to have work on a strong website and strong web presence. And then you've got the whole world at your fingertips. It's really kind of amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm curious just about your tactics on Instagram. Like, do you post every day or do you feature certain products? Like, what do you find? Like, what's driving people to purchase from you?
Honestly, my Instagram, you know, people get really, really serious about their Instagram. And, you know, I got to post every day and you plan your content out. But I honestly don't plan out. It's really just like, this is what I'm working on today, or this is what I'm thinking about. And literally this is what's in my head and I'm going to put it into the caption. So it's really free flowing for me. I'm lucky to have that kind of thing where I don't need to plan it out. And I take photos incessantly. It's just constant photos. I probably have like 40,000 photos on my phone. So it's really easy for me to kind of pull content. And I like to post every day and getting on stories and kind of showing people what I'm doing and doing more videos. I should do that more often and show my face more often. People love to see that. But connecting with the people, because that's what Instagram is about, is connecting with your customers.
Right. Well, and obviously it sounds like you're getting enough business just doing what you're doing. So you don't really need to.
No, that. Yeah, it's been working. So, I mean, obviously I should always be growing and trying to strengthen different aspects of my business, but Instagram has been the core. And I'm extremely, extremely thankful that I was able to find my community on there and share things with people. It's really great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to go back to the teaching then, because I think you have an online how to make paper class or
it's more just like a kind of a basic intro. It's a lot of writing. Like I said, I'm a better writer. So it may be a little too wordy, but there's a lot of information in there. And then I have a few videos to kind of demonstrate, obviously the pulling of the sheets in different parts that are easier to see. But that was mostly developed to go with my kit. So it comes with the mold and decal, the Kozo and the tub and some felts and whatever you need for that. So right now I'm actually revising that part of my kit. Kit's going to have a few changes. This time it's going to have a magnetic mold and decal and some different fiber options. And then I'm strengthening the tutorial to also stand on its own. It does stand on its own now, but I want it to be really great on its own too. So reworking that material so that if you don't want to buy the full kit, you can just get the tutorial, get you set up. I've had people all over the world buy the tutorial, which is really great. So hopefully when I can get the next kit launched, some more people can get on board with that too. And it's really great because people, they do ask questions, and I'd love to be able to sit on Instagram and answer everyone's questions for them. But, you know, I've got a lot of things to do too. So yeah. The tutorial kind of helped help solve that problem a little bit. And I've heard a lot of great feedback on it too. So it's really exciting.
Are you sending them prepared pulp, or how are you telling them to prepare the pulp?
The first rendition that I did, I was actually cooking and cleaning the cozo for them. To a certain point, they can clean the rest themselves.
Yeah.
But that was extremely labor intensive.
Right.
And I was actually finding that some customers weren't opening their kits, and they just weren't opening them when they arrived. You know, cozo goes bad, as well as the sizing.
Yeah.
So if you're not opening it, I did have a note that said, put this in the fridge, but if you don't read the note. So I'm going to kind of clarify that a little more this time. And I'm also going to offer the raw fiber with cooking instructions. That's in the tutorial as well.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of set them up for cooking. And then I'm also going to, I think I'm going to offer the cooked cozo as kind of a separate add-on. So if you want to buy it already cooked, you can do that. But here's another option too. So, and I want to include abaca and other things like that too, to kind of round out the fiber selections. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so cool. It's a really unique business model. And I love how you just try things. I mean, this is what anyone does, right?
Yeah.
And then you learn, oh, they didn't open it and it's going bad, so I need to address that.
Exactly. It's been a learning process from day one. So, you know, you just got to jump in, try it out, see what works, what doesn't work, and then revise, take it from there. Yeah.
And you say you've sent these all over the world. So I'm just curious, do you have a number? How many of these kits are out there?
I think the first set that I did, I actually had to stop selling them because I couldn't make them fast enough in my small studio, and just moving wise, it wasn't smart. I think I sold around 30 of them first time.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just me making them, and they were a lot more complicated. So hoping to kind of streamline the production process and get them into maybe a little higher production there. But you know, whatever numbers the sells, I'm happy with, because it's also kind of, it's trying to balance my own paper making with the kits and the magnetic mold deckles. So it's, you know, when I get bored of just making paper, I can switch over to the kits and go back and forth. So it's I like having that other kind of venue to work on as well. So go back and forth.
Right. And you are doing everything yourself? Do you ever hire anyone to help?
At the beginning of the year, I tried a little bit of help. Honestly, I like to work by myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm not making a ton of money either. So it's hard to, you know, support another person as well.
Right.
I tried it. I think right now it's important for me to create a sustainable business for myself. I don't want to have to rely on other people to help me. If I do get a huge project or something, I do have a fellow papermaker in the area that loves to hop in and help me out when he can.
Right.
But it's important for me to be able to do it on my own. I want to see if I can make this work as one person. You know, bigger isn't always better. So I
totally agree. I think about that all the time. You know, how big is too big? And
yeah, you know, I see a lot of other papermaking companies kind of popping up here and there, but they have they have employees, people to help them with their marketing and everything. Mm-hmm. And it's fun to watch them do their thing, but I like to do my own as well. Mm-hmm. And just kind of keep my eyes down and focus on my own craft. It's really cool.
Yeah. And so are you getting orders every week? Sort of curious about the flow of orders.
Yeah, since I have the newer studio, it's a much larger kind of thing. I expanded my dry box system and trying to make as much as possible. There's always room to grow, but I'm trying to keep it, make paper that, to keep my website fully stocked. It used to be that I would make whatever paper I could, put it online, it would sell out immediately. And that's great, but it's not a very good source for stationers. So
right.
I'm trying to keep certain things in stock so that there's always paper available online.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other hand, with, you know, if it's a really serious stationer or a person who wants a really unique wedding, they can just email me and we're going to work through all of the details together, you know, figure out exactly the color, weight, size, style, all of those little details that you can't really do through a website.
Right.
You got to talk through. So I get a couple of those a week, kind of, you know, varying sizes. Sometimes it's just the day of papers, place cards, menus, things like that. And, you know, it's handmade paper can be expensive. So it's sometimes it's just they want one piece of the invitation to be handmade paper to illuminate that part of it. So it's a wide variety of custom orders or people that can order online too. So it's constantly balancing that.
Yeah. And I noticed on your website that you said something like, if you're serious about this, or there, you have some phrase, because I could just see it, you know, you get a lot of queries and then they hear the price and they're like, oh, forget it.
Exactly.
So, yeah. You have to kind of figure out how to address.
Yeah.
I'm so constantly that you don't waste all your time. Yeah,
exactly. It's about, you know, you have to be able to educate your clients as well, give them as much information as possible so that when they come to you, they, you know, that they know what they're getting into. You know, I love answering emails and talking to people, but it's also like, that's a lot of emails to answer in one day. I got to make paper. Yeah. That's the most important part.
Right. Yeah. So you have the online, so it's like a shop, mm-hmm. and then you do custom orders. Who are your clients? Do you have wedding consultants, and you mentioned stationers? Do you have stores or?
I don't do stores. Okay. I'm not making high
wholesale.
Enough. Yeah. I give people a little bit of a bulk price break if they're ordering mm-hmm. a lot. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't technically call it wholesale, but do it as that. But I have a couple lamps in Maine at Coat Craft, contemporary craft store in Ellsworth, where I'm from. Oh. But it's mostly paper now, so it's easier for me to keep it focused onto my own website and just deal directly with people. Mm-hmm. And it really is, Instagram is my main networking area. It's a lot of calligraphers, stationers is the term they really like. So it's these, I had no idea that this kind of world even existed, but these people create these beautiful suites of wedding stationery, and some of them are just so out of this world and so unique and creative. But there's a huge world out there of stationery enthusiasts. So they find me usually on Instagram. And shoot me a message and we kind of go from there. So there's a wide variety of people on there.
Yeah. And so you're doing it all. Do you ever talk to anyone on the phone or is it usually just?
Very rarely.
Wow.
I'm not much of a phone person. But if it is a client and they want to talk on the phone, of course I'm going to pick it up and talk to them. Some of these orders can get pretty large and involved.
Yeah.
It's best to connect directly with them, but I'm still learning all that process too. It's a learning. It's the entire thing is all learning for me, but fun.
Yeah. So what's a typical order, custom order, like a number, like 25, 50, smaller?
Yes. Well, I try not to take the smaller ones kind of slow me down unless it's part of the creating the new line of Abaca papers is so that I can take custom orders quicker. You know, I can fill orders with what they need. Mm-hmm. But if they need something specific, a different kind of blend, I got to go back to the drawing board with that one. And, you know, it really depends on the order. Sometimes there's like certain colors I just can't do because it would slow down my process way too much. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of inquiries for pink and I just, for whatever reason, pink just doesn't fit into my production line right now.
Right.
So it's constantly balanced. Like, what am I working on? What are their deadlines as well? A lot of people don't think far enough ahead, and handmade paper takes a lot of time, especially mm-hmm. as one person doing it by themselves. So it really just depends on deadlines, what I'm able to do, what I've got on my plate, and what they're asking for. So it mm-hmm. just goes back and forth. Sometimes it's just 100 menus for a wedding. I just sent some green menus off for a wedding in Maine. I'm really jealous because I'd love to go home to Maine. Uh-huh. Go home with my menus.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And sometimes it's just envelopes. But it's the wide range of my papers, really.
Right. And is anyone letterpress printing on them? You haven't mentioned that.
Yeah, a lot of do. And I've actually heard recently, I mean, my next step is really, I've got to get my papers into more people's, more stationers' hands, more letterpress people's hands. There's a really great company called Copper Willow out in California. They messaged me the other day and said my paper is incredible for gold foiling. That's a big thing in the stationery world. And for whatever reason, my surface is it's not linty. So it's a good solid surface for the gold foiling. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that. Of course, I really like to use the really dark colors, the dark blues and greens. So those are my more popular colors. So there's less, there are people out there that do digital printing. But whereas mine is darker colors. If you know how to do, it is possible to do white digital printing on paper. So I'm curious to find a stationer that's willing to do that with me. But yeah, letterpress, it's a lot of calligraphy people too, because my surface is smoother. It's great for calligraphy. But the wide range, you know, I'm surprised, but people do the digital printing quite a bit on the lighter colored papers as well. But yeah, it's the whole range, really.
Yeah. Fascinating. Fascinating. So what's in the vat right now?
Oh gosh, I got a few different vats going. I'm actually doing a really light gray. I'm stocking up, and it's time to start doing some neutrals. I've been fighting it for a while because it's really what the wedding industry wants. It's more neutral, easy papers to work with. Mm-hmm. So, I'm kind of like known for not wanting to do white. it drives me insane to just like make white paper all day. It's kind of boring for me. I also find it really, really tedious because actually every little hair and speck drives me insane.
So
I'm doing a big batch of really light gray. So hopefully that'll be fill the need for the neutral colors in there and kind of fill out my collection a little bit. Yeah.
Cool. And you mentioned you have a couple lamps in the gallery in Maine. Do you make other artwork, or are you pretty much busy?
Oh gosh, I'm too busy. Yeah, I've got the lamps. There's a few in Maine. I am planning to relaunch a few. Right before I moved to Philly, I worked with a couple glass blowers in Maine. Tandem Glass is their name, and it's a husband and wife duo that blow glass. And I had this beautiful, really beautiful vessel lamp idea that I loved, but you know, there was no way of actually designing the base. You know, it was kind of, this is the base I find, you build the shade to match. Mm-hmm. So when I finally got the lamp to the point that I wanted it to be at, I contacted them, and I was able to actually design the bases myself. So they're more unique kind of, and they're hand blown, they're beautiful, thick glass.
Oh, yeah.
And then I promptly moved to Philly and then the wedding orders started coming in, and they never got the attention they deserve. So mm-hmm. I'm going to be relaunching. I think there's like four or five of those beautiful one of a kind pieces that I'm going to relaunch this fall. And I think that'll be the last hurrah for those for a little while. Until the market changes. It's kind of what I like about handmade paper is there's so many different ways to go at it, you know, and it really can transform into something else. And maybe I'm not selling much paper anymore, and maybe I move over to lamps. I still love sculpture and building things. You could do more kind of artistic lampshade things as well. So it's kind of the sky's the limit as long as I have enough time to do it all.
Yeah. Well, Stephanie, you're really an inspiration, because I talk to people all the time who just have no clue about how to make a living, make paper.
Yeah. Well, so, thank you. It's really
just the best. Yeah.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's so wonderful to meet you, Helen. I have to say that my first book that I ever bought was your Papermaker's Companion, and I really learned a lot from you. So thank you for all that you do.
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming on Paper Talk.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. Bye now.
Bye.
Hey, paper friends. Did you know that I write a weekly blog called The Sunday Paper, featuring stories of people doing exciting, innovative, and beautiful things with paper? Sign up at helenhebertstudio.com/blog. I'm also creating a lot of content over here, and the best way to stay up to date is to join my newsletter list to learn about free tutorials, online classes, workshops, and the annual Red Cliff Paper Retreat, which takes place right here at Helen Hebert Studio. You can sign up at helenhebertstudio.com to receive my e-newsletter. This wraps up our episode, and if you enjoyed it, I'd appreciate it if you could leave a review over on iTunes. This helps other people find out about the podcast. Special thanks to Gary A. Hansen for the sound editing and Peter Thomas for the music. Visit helenhebertstudio.com and click on Paper Talk, where you can find out more about them, subscribe to the series via iTunes, and listen to other episodes and access all of the archived shows. I'll talk to you soon.